Hello, and welcome to Friends for Life, a podcast of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's National Mission. We're here to come alongside you as we journey through life under the cross. What does it look like to care for our neighbors in body and soul? How do we tend to our own body and soul? How can we speak up for life? And finally, how do we share the faith with the next generation? Join us as we have these conversations and learn together. We hope you'll stick around and be our friends for life.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Nugebauer, here with my guest, Reverend Jesse Kuecker. Jesse, welcome. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. I am Pastor Jesse Kuecker. I serve as the Director of Enrollment at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
Awesome. What does that job entail?
Oh, a whole lot of things. It entails primarily caring for our prospective students who are looking at coming to the seminary. So coming alongside families and men who are thinking about pastoral ministry, praying for them, supporting them, guiding them. So our office is all things recruitment, admissions, enrollment for all 13 of our programs here at the seminary. We have 641 enrolled students right now across all of our programs. So a lot of future church workers are in the works and a lot of people to care for.
Yeah, is that a good number for us? We've been on a major recruitment kick lately.
Yeah, it's actually our highest total enrollment in 17 years here at the seminary.
Whoa, Jesse, yeah. Way to go.
Well,
holy
cow.
Me.
It's not me. It's just the work of the church.
That's awesome.
Incredible pastors and faithful laity out there recruiting and encouraging more men and women towards church work. So yeah, we're excited about the future here at the seminary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, me too. Tell us about your family real quick, too. You're married. You have kids.
Yeah, married. My wife, Alyssa. We just celebrated our 15-year wedding anniversary this past October.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We had a fall wedding, and fall's our favorite season. And we have four children. So our oldest is 12, and then we have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old who you're going to hear a little bit more about his name. Well, I'll save that for later in the podcast. But yeah, my wife's got really, this is important for your listeners. So my wife's got really dark hair, black hair, and I'm a redhead. I know people can't see me, but I'm a redhead. So what most people were worried about wasn't, are you having a boy or a girl? It was, are you having, you know, a redhead baby or dark hair? And three of our four children are redheads. So
no way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great. So I'm assuming the other is dark?
Oh, yeah. She's a mini Alyssa. Yeah. She's got dark hair, just like my wife. Yeah.
Ah, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what a blessing to have four kids, 12, 10, 8, 6. That is like boom, 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 boom. I'm sure you had some really, really busy years and you're entering some really busy years too. I hear that it only picks up as they get older, which I can't really imagine. But
yeah, that's what I hear. Bigger kids, bigger problems is what I've been told. But yeah, the Lord's with us and they're wonderful children. We, what Luther says, the home is the school of our all virtue, right? So we're learning all of our virtues together to so care for them and, you know, do all of the schooling and the sports. It's a full house.
So Jesse, tell us about your youngest, your 6-year-old. If you would share his story, I know that you actually have a really inspirational video that you shared with me through email before we came on. But if you would actually start at the beginning, as far as when you heard you were expecting your now 6-year-old, and then what his life already kind of looks like inside the womb while Alyssa was carrying him, and what it looks like now. So I know that's a lot to unpack, but I would love to share his story with our listeners.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity for me to share his story. I can't guarantee I'm going to be able to get through it without choking up, but I will do my best. So we'll pick up the story at the 19-week ultrasound. We found out that ultrasound, that's the big ultrasound, you know, when you find out, are you having a boy or a girl? You know, this was our fourth ultrasound. So we had been through this before. We know how it goes. We find out we're having a boy or a girl, and we go home and we start thinking about names. And so we're there and we were told we're having a boy. And you know, really exciting. And, you know, I'm holding my wife's hand and They keep looking at our boy and not really saying much. And about 5 or 10 minutes later, some other doctors came in the room. And that's when we were told that our son had, on the ultrasound, they saw a large, let me explain it this way. They said he had what was called bladder outlet obstruction. So essentially, his bladder was obstructed, that he could not urinate in the womb. And they knew that.
Which listeners probably don't know, babies do.
Yeah.
They swallow amniotic fluid and they urinate it out.
Yes.
They swallow amniotic fluid and they urinate out.
I did not know any of this until our son was diagnosed with this. So bladder outlet obstruction, BOO, is it's a terrible diagnosis to hear when your child's in the womb, because it's diagnosed by seeing that bladder is really enlarged. So you see a big black pool of fluid inside the child, and that's all the amniotic fluid from inside the womb. The child, as you're saying, sips on that fluid and swallows it and then urinates it out and then just repeats the process. And if the child isn't able to urinate out the fluid it swallows, then the bladder just gets really enlarged. And on an ultrasound picture, we didn't know any of this, but you want to see a bunch of, you know, black fluid. You want to see big pockets of amniotic fluid
around the baby.
Around the baby, especially right around the mouth, so that the child can be swallowing it. Because the Lord designs us this way, part of how he fearfully and wonderfully knits us together in our mother's womb is that by swallowing that fluid, the lungs actually are developed and created. So we learn how to breathe by swallowing water in the womb. It's fascinating what we've been able to see now that we are able to look inside the womb a little bit. But for Creed, that process was interrupted. So he swallowed all the amniotic fluid. So in the ultrasound, you didn't see that those, you know, big, beautiful pockets of black fluid around him. It was all white. You know, it was all basically baby in the womb. And the only black part of fluid, the black part in the ultrasound is the fluid. All of that was inside of him, stuck in his bladder. So his bladder looked like a huge, like swimming pool. You know, it was just really large. And they were explaining all of this to us and told us we had to immediately go get a second level ultrasound at a hospital up in Kansas City the next day. And so we didn't know much, but we knew that there was a problem and that we knew that this was bad news for our son. So we went from, in a matter of 20 minutes, learning that we were having a boy to learning that this isn't right, this isn't good, you need to go have a second ultrasound. So that night, my wife and I went home, and there were a lot of tears and a lot of prayer. And we decided to name our son Creed that night, Latin for I believe, I have faith. Because we knew that the Lord of heaven and earth and the Lord of life was with our boy and that he would heal him, if not now in the womb on the last day, that we would have all eternity with him. And so we named him Creed that night, and we went up. Oh, and I'll say this. I've never prayed so much for someone to pee as I've done for Creed. we just prayed all night for Creed to pee. I mean, we needed him to urinate in the womb. He wasn't doing that. That's what he needed. So those were fun prayers to pray, you know?
Yeah, as parents, you pray for so much you don't expect to pray before you become parents.
Yeah, Lord, help them.
It's kind of wild.
Help them to pee. Just help them. Yeah, so we went up for the second level ultrasound the next day. And if we thought the first day was hard, we had no idea how challenging and hard this next day was going to be. That was really the ultrasound where the doctors really took a really long look at everything that was happening. And we were told the news that no parent wants to hear. We were told in that ultrasound room that because of his bladder outlet obstruction, he essentially wouldn't have viable lungs. Like his lung, he would be born with lungs like the size of quarters. He would not be able to breathe once he was born. So children with bladder outlet obstruction have, they told us, a 14% chance of surviving birth. Most are born and they're only able to survive for just a few seconds or minutes and then pass away. So imagine hearing that and then being asked, so do you want to abort your child? Because that's immediately what they followed it up with. Do you want to abort your child today?
Wow.
So our little boy, Creed, at 19 weeks in the womb, medical professionals all around us saying, are asking if we wanted to abort him. Now, what they didn't say at the time, what we found out later, is that yes, 86% of children with bladder outlet obstruction don't survive, but that's because 50% of them are aborted. And they don't tell you that.
Can I stop you right there and ask you, after you received the ultrasound report from the second level ultrasound, what, like a physician immediately came in and said, this is the diagnosis, this is the outlook, and then how did they word it for you?
Yeah.
Do you want to abort?
Yeah. I remember Alyssa was on the table and, you know, the ultrasound tech was there and the doctor came in and said, this is not a good diagnosis. Only very few survive. He pointed to a couple of other things. Like they couldn't find, I forgot what organ it was, but they also couldn't find another organ. I don't know if it was the liver or something like that. So he pointed to that, but, Creed's issues with all of the bladder being stuck or all of the urine being stuck in his bladder is that urine had backed up. So it's called PUV, posterior urethral valves. So, you know, essentially when your kidneys filter out your fluids and then dump it into the bladder, but Creed's bladder was so backed up that the fluids were going in reverse. They had backed up into the kidneys and had damaged both kidneys. So we were told, his kidneys are both damaged. He doesn't have working kidneys. His lungs aren't going to be viable because he's not able to swallow any more amniotic fluid. Now, knowing all of this in his context, would you like an abortion completed? And I don't remember the look on our face, but we must have had some sort of look on our face where our doctor immediately knew that was not an option for us, and he never asked us again. But here's the thing, Stephanie. That day, on that day, in that ultrasound, we saw Creed pee. while they were watching his bladder, he peed just a little bit, but he did. And we got an ultrasound picture of him giving us a thumbs up that day. So
got what you prayed for.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, all right. So like, talk about a day of just mixed emotions where you're hearing your all of this bad news, bad news, bad news. But then also you're seeing a little bit of hope. You know, what he did just pee and there is a little bit of fluid, you know, now. And so we went home and over the next 9 weeks, we would go into that same ultrasound room every week. Every week we had another review and every week we got the same bad news. And for any, I guess I would say for any parent who has heard bad news like that in an ultrasound room, my heart goes out to them because it is really hard to hear the worst news imaginable to a parent that your child isn't or might not make it. And so our whole church was praying. We had such wonderful people around us praying at Trinity Lutheran Church in Clinton, Missouri. The whole community was praying, the Catholic Church and the Presbyterian Church and the Baptist Church and all the wonderful Christians in our community were praying for Creed. The LCMS churches in our circuit were praying for Creed, our families, our friends. There were so many people who rallied around praying for Creed and just, Lord, help him, help continue to knit him together as you desire him, protect him, help him to breathe, you know, help him to pee, help him to do all these things he needs to do. And I can't tell you how many times I personally, as his dad, I would drop down on my knees in my office or at church in the sanctuary. I would pray the prayer of the Roman centurion. Lord, only say the word and my son will be healed. just say the word. All you have to do is say the word and he'll be healed. And that was my prayer every week, week in, week out. And we get to that 28-week ultrasound after 9 weeks of bad news, bad news, bad news. And the ultrasound tech looks at something and she says, well, that doesn't look so bad. And that was like the best news we had heard in over 2 months. That doesn't look so bad. And we're like, what does this mean? What doesn't look so bad? Of course, she's not saying anything. Another doctor comes in. They're looking at the ultrasound for 10 minutes. Nothing is said. No words spoken. They're just looking. And all Alyssa and I have to go off of is something doesn't look so bad. And that was really good news for us to hear. And immediately they brought us into a room around a table. There were like, I don't know, 12 or 15 chairs around the table, but four or five doctors and techs came in and they had the pictures printed out and they started talking about the medical side of things. But all we remember is them saying, we can operate on this in the womb. He can get a surgery in the womb to help him and his lungs could be viable and he might be able to live. And we didn't know that there are doctors today, surgeons today who operate on children in the womb. And we have met the most incredible people around this country. Doctors and surgeons who operate on children inside the womb. Dr. Timothy Crumbleholm is, they call the father of fetal surgery. He's the first doctor who operated on a child inside the womb. He goes around the whole country as TED Talks. He goes around the whole country teaching surgeons how to operate on children in the womb. And in Dallas, Texas, there's a surgeon by the name of Dr. Kevin McGee. And Dr. McGee walked into that room when we came in for the surgery and he said, pray for my hands. I work on them, but it's the Lord who heals them.
Wow.
Incredible surgeon. He says, if we operate on children hours after birth, why not operate on them hours before? Why not operate on them while they're still in the womb? The only difference is they're on the other side of the skin. So operate on them inside the womb, heal their bodies, let the womb continue to heal them. And then that way they have a much better diagnosis going forward. And so we went to Dallas, Texas at 28 weeks old in the womb and Creed had his very first surgery. They put a shunt in his bladder to let all that urine out so that he could then start swallowing it and continue the process. Now, I watched the first, there was a couple of different operations, and I was in the room actually for the first one. It was more kind of an outpatient one where they just wanted to put some more fluid in the womb. So I watched while Dr. McGee stuck a needle right through my wife's womb, right above the, before they did the fluid, they wanted to drain his bladder. So they wanted to get a needle into his bladder and pull all the urine out to see if it would fill back up or empty. So I watched a needle come in through my wife's womb right above the hip bone of Creed right into his bladder and they emptied it for him. That was the first operation. And then they filled the womb with some fluid. But then the next day was the big one where they actually put the shunt in. So basically a bypass. So that the process could naturally occur. So he could swallow the fluid they put in and it could escape. And then Creed was in the womb for 8 more weeks with that shunt in his bladder. And so he was born at 36 weeks.
Nearly almost full term.
Yeah.
It was technically 37. So that's amazing that she was able to carry him that long.
Yeah, that right.
Wow.
Yeah, and I want to stop here and just say to anyone that's listening that encounters bad news while the child is in the womb, especially if you were to hear bladder outlet obstruction or not very much amniotic fluid followed by all sorts of terrible news that comes after those sorts of diagnoses, I want them to know that there's hope, that there are things available to them that maybe in our case, the doctor didn't say at the beginning. We didn't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But now we know, and we want everyone to know that if that's your diagnosis, you should look into finding these surgeons who operate on children in the womb and can do wonderful things to help their life. If it wasn't for that operation, we don't think we'd have Creed with us this day. But because of these surgeries and the things that they're doing in the womb, now Creed is, he's six.
Yeah.
He's 6 years old, you know, and he goes to kindergarten and he started kindergarten this year. But yeah.
So I have a couple questions, if I may. Why wasn't that an option before? Was there something that all of a sudden with that 28-week ultrasound, he became a candidate because something didn't look all that bad? Or did they just not share with you that surgery was a possibility prior to that?
Well, there were two things that stand out to us in our journey that I think are pertinent. One is we didn't know that there was an operation to help with bladder outlet obstruction for the first 8 or 9 weeks. They just never shared it with us. And I don't know why they didn't share it with us. But the second part was we were specifically told by a genetic doctor. So they wanted to do all sorts of genetics. And when you're in desperation mode as parents, you're willing to do whatever medical tests and things you can do to help give your child any chance at life you can. So we had all the genetics run on Creed. And I still remember meeting with the genetics doctor, and she told us, this was like around 26 weeks in the womb. She said, the good news is your child's not going to make it, but at least your future kids won't have what he has.
Oh, how did that hit you?
Oh my gosh. My wife and I just are in, I mean, just in such, you're just in despair. You're just, you're frustrated, you're angry, you're sad. You feel all the range of emotions when you keep hearing from all the medical professionals that your child's not going to make it. But she's told us because his kidneys were completely damaged, he doesn't, and she said, because, you know, immediately you react like, there's always hope. There's always a chance. We believe in, you know, we believe that God can do great things. And she said, her response was, but his kidneys aren't working. So we were told by a genetic doctor, our kid's not going to live because his kidneys aren't working. But then when Creed was born at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, and we told the team there that we were told by that genetics doctor 8 weeks ago that there's nothing they can do because his kidneys aren't working, they said, who told you that? And why did they tell you that? There's so many things we can do with children who don't have working kidneys. And Creed survived without working kidneys. I mean, there was a lot of work in caring for him. We had to, both Alyssa and I were trained peritoneal dialysis. You can't say nurses, but we were trained on peritoneal dialysis machines. And we ran his dialysis cares overnight until he was able to receive a kidney transplant at the age of a year and 10 months old.
Constantly 24/7 on dialysis. I mean, is that what you're talking about? Because he doesn't have kidneys that can filter.
Right. His dialysis would run overnight while he was sleeping, and we were able to do that at home. But Creed is on he's got a lot of medical complexities. I mean, when he was born at 36 weeks, I remember my wife and I mean, that's a really nervous time. This is a child you've prayed for relentlessly, and now it's time for him to be born, and you're praying and hoping that things go well. And our prayer at that point was just, Lord, help him breathe. Because he didn't have to pee anymore. That was fine. The shunt was taking care of that. But we don't know how well his lungs are going to be. How big are they going to be? Or is he going to be able to breathe? And I remember looking at my wife right before, you know, she pushed, and I said, He's going to breathe. And he did. I mean, there's a whole team of like 14 or 15 doctors and surgeons and nurses, you know, waiting right on the other side of these sliding glass doors. We were told we wouldn't have any time with him. They set that expectation real quick. As soon as he came out, he was going to be ushered off and immediately cared for and tended to. But we actually got about a minute with him because he was breathing just enough where Alyssa got to hold him. We did an emergency baptism because you just don't know. and they had to help him. I mean, after about a minute, they had to help him. And so he was put on a ventilator, an oscillator at first, and then a ventilator. And his first 70 days were in the NICU at the hospital. And he's got a lot of medical complexities around the clock that we still walk through with him today. I mean, he doesn't eat anything by mouth. He's fed through a feeding tube. And his lungs still are, you know, if he gets a cold, he's in the hospital for at least a week, even like a regular cold. He got an RSV 2 years ago, and he was in the hospital for like 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's been a long walk with him, but gosh, he's been an amazing gift from the Lord.
So where did he get a kidney transplant from? Who was his donor?
Well, that was me. So I'm his donor. We were a perfect match. We're both redheads.
It was meant to be.
It goes by hair. I don't know if you knew that. It goes by hair color.
So in all the best literature says.
No, both O negative blood types. They really look at your blood when you're doing a kidney transplant. So for a kid, if you're 55 years or younger, you can be an organ donor to a child, at least kidneys. That's really all I know about. So they tested both my wife and I. So they tested both Alyssa and I, and Alyssa wanted to be the donor because she didn't want to have to take care of Creed and me. But I was the best.
Please. Anything is better than a husband laying on his back. Not well.
Right. Yeah. But she was A positive. So, you know, there's just nothing you could do at that point.
No can do.
Yeah. So no, it was an honor. I mean, any parent would do that for their kid. He got my left kidney, which was my bigger kidney, and I'm stuck with my right one. So, and it's working just fine.
Okay. So how did doctors walk you through that? The possibility of you being a kidney donor for him, and then the outlook that he would have after he received the transplant. And then what does the future look like for him now?
Yeah, well, we have an incredible medical team around Creed. His doctors have always been supportive and upfront and very good at explaining, you know, doctors like to give you the worst case scenario so that you're pleasantly, you know, surprised or happy when that doesn't happen. And we have been through, our family has been through hundreds of hospital nights with Creed. He has spent about 2.5 years of his life in the hospital, 29 operations, multiple rapid responses and code blues. We have been with him at the brink of death many times. And there have been a lot of long nights next to Creed's bedside in an ICU room or a PICU room with him hooked up on ventilators and all the beeping and alarms that just are so hard to hear at night. And throughout all of those hospitalizations and rapid responses and surgeries, Alyssa and I's go-to is we go to Psalm 62. That has been our prayer over and over again for Creed and for all families going through things like this. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope comes from him. He only is my rock, my fortress, my salvation, and in him I will not be greatly shaken. That was our prayer over and over again. And so Creed's team would come alongside of us and tell us, you know, the options were for his kidney transplant. We could wait for a deceased donor, or you could have a living donor. And a living donor is a little bit easier to plan. And of course, that was our first option for Alyssa and I. We wanted to do what was easiest and best for Creed. And so we both went through the testing to see if we were a match. And when I found out I was a match, it was an easy decision after that. So, so after the transplant happened, I wish I could show a picture, but this is just a podcast, but Creed and I looked very different. Creed was like, arms up, just living the best days of his life. He felt so much better. He's excited. We have this picture of his arms up. He's just so happy. And I'm like hunched over in pain, just not doing the best. And it's just a funny picture because, I mean, what parent wouldn't love to see that, you know, like their kid is doing so much better because of something that you're able to give them and do for them. And it's a beautiful picture of God's love himself for us. I mean, what he has done for us in Christ and provided for us so that we might have life in his name. So now he's had this kidney for 4 years. We just celebrated our 4-year kidney anniversary on August 31st. My wife always makes kidney cookie, like, that sounds terrible. Cookies in the shape of kidneys. I'm getting you cookies. And she always gets us a matching t-shirt. So I think the shirt this year was a, it says, "Dude, where's my kidney?" So we both, you know, wear that shirt.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's been wonderful. I mean, it really is like a light bulb that goes off when a child receives an organ that they need. But for, you asked about what's next for Creed. And that's where, I covet everyone's prayers who are listening to this episode, because we did find out about a year ago that he's in rejection for his kidney transplant. So we've been now in that journey of kidney transplant rejection for the last year. Thankfully, his team has really been able to slow down the rejection quite a bit. I mean, when we first found out about this March last year, we didn't know if his kidney would last a few months or a few weeks or a few years. And thankfully, by God's grace, we're on the few years side of things, hopefully. So I just covet everyone's prayers that, you know, we've prayed for Creed to pee, we've prayed for Creed to breathe. So now we pray that Creed's kidney can continue to work for him. But eventually he will need another transplant. And we were told that up front, that a kidney transplant typically lasts 15 to 20 years, and then eventually he'll need a second one. So he'll need another one at some point. And we know the Lord will provide when that day comes. The Lord has provided for him in so many ways, so many ways so far. But that's where we are right now.
We will definitely, our family will be adding him to our prayer list, knowing that now. And we will be praying for your entire family. And I invite our listeners to be praying for the Kuiker family in all of this. Jesse, can you share with us as we wrap up, what about Creed's life and his journey and your journey together as a family has been a testament to God's design for life, the value that he gave life, the Creed's life in the womb, and now, of course, after birth too. Tell us how Creed is a testimony to our view of life.
Yeah. Well, Alyssa and I, we fully recognize that our entire perspective has been changed through this whole process. You wouldn't wish this on any parent. You wouldn't wish this kind of a journey for anyone. But Paul's words ring true for us, that we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope doesn't put us to shame because of the love of God that's been poured into our hearts through Jesus Christ, Paul says in Romans 5. And so a parent who is going through this, and for us ourselves, we've gone through this, it is so easy to get stuck on the bad news and what's not going right, and to have a heart filled with bitterness and doubt. You're in a boat with rocky seas, and the nights are long and dark, and it is absolutely terrifying. You wouldn't wish that on anyone. But at the same time, as Christians, you scratch below the surface a bit, and Paul says that we must rejoice in these things. And why would he say something as ridiculous as that? But it's because that these sufferings produce things. These sufferings produce endurance and character, and ultimately hope. One's faith and hope is formed through these crosses and through these real sufferings. It has brought us so much closer to the Lord. Our faith in him, that has been the biggest change in our lives. We have a daily reminder in Creed that we have to depend on God to provide our daily bread. I mean, for our other, we've got three healthy kids, right? And the things you wish for them and pray for them is like, I hope they have a good day at school. I hope they have a good soccer practice. I hope they make good friends. You know, the things that parents typically think about. But with Creed, it's, I hope he lives. I hope we get another day with him. I hope we get another birthday. I hope we get another Christmas. his whole life is in God's hands, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're just it's out of your control. And that hope and that faith is cultivated through these sufferings. I mean, Creed just had a Make-A-Wish trip. He got to go, his wish was to see Mario. And he sees all Mario. I mean, we got a picture of him jumping up in the air or doing the Mario jump. And it's like these moments in his life, you immediately give thanks to God for it, because you know this wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for God, if it wasn't for the fact that we as Christians believe in a God of life and that he desires our good, and he continues to work all things together for the good of those who love him. And so when we see Creed, we see God's handiwork. We see how much God loves us, and we rejoice in that. So yes, our lives are filled with much suffering, as everyone else has their own crosses to bear and sufferings that they endure. But in those sufferings, we rejoice, and we have found we're not celebrating or having fun. We're rejoicing in the sense that there's a deep and abiding hope in the Lord of heaven and earth, who will provide what we need in this moment where we can't see how and we can't see our way through it. But he will, and he has, and he does.
You've already offered a lot of encouragement, both to our listeners and to those who may be facing either a similar diagnosis or just a really scary diagnosis, whether that's when you're expecting or after the birth of a baby. But if you had a chance to say something else to these families, what would you say?
My heart breaks for them. And I'm sorry that they're going through this, whatever it might be. Listen, I know that struggle really well. And as parents who have walked this medical journey with Creed, we've encountered other families who have walked similar journeys. And it's a connection that is very deep, because it's one most people don't know. And, you know, the frustrations with just staying on top of everything and making sure your child gets what he needs, and the doctors and the physicians and the pharmacies and the prescription reordering and the home medical device companies and insurance woes and all, and families. And there's just a lot that can overwhelm you very quickly. And in the midst of that, I would say you're not alone. The Lord of heaven and earth is with you. And find scripture to be your rock. Find either a book or a chapter or a psalm that you will just make your own, that you will say in these moments of desperation and feeling overwhelmed, it's time to go back to this text. For us, that was Psalm 62. There are other times in where I would just start reading the Gospels to Creed. I would just read through the Gospel of John with him. The Word of God was always our ultimate comfort, going back to the Scriptures, going back to what God says, because when the voices of man are hopeless, our God is hopeful, and his words carry ultimate hope. And also, I would be happy to anyone going through situations like this, I'd be happy for them to reach out to me so that I can be praying for them too, and share those words of hope with them too, and hear their stories and assure them that they're not alone in this, and be a resource to them in any way that I can.
Thank you so much, Pastor Jesse Kuecker, for joining me today and for sharing about Creed and his challenging but wonderful life in Christ.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie. Thanks for letting me share his story. And thanks for what you're doing as a voice for life, and with your own medical background too and your theology. This is just a wonderful thing. As a church, we need to continue to speak words of life out into a culture of death. And this is a wonderful avenue for that. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks so much for our listeners for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at LCMS Life. And finally, listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have an idea about a guest you'd like to hear from or a topic you want talked about? Email us at friendsforlife@lcms.org. We want to hear from you about what you want to hear about when it comes to issues of life.
For joining us, Friends for Life is a podcast that discusses the life God has given and the people He has called you to serve, right where you are, in God's mission.